So it's 5:30, and we have presenters ready. So I'm going to call the meeting to order. And it's a study session, and ask Stephanie to do a roll call.
Tom Moore.
Here.
Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Omoasagie.
Here.
Elaine Plencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robbins.
Here.
Margaret White.
Here.
Susan Fowler.
Here. Typically, at our regular sessions, we have public participation and citizen input. This is a study session where we will be having a lot of citizen input and public participation. Is there anyone in the audience who is outside of the study group presentation? Want to make sure that you're all part of the study group presentation. I'm seeing nuts. Okay. Then we will skip public participation, citizen input, and move on to approval of the agenda. Are there any concerns about the agenda? Okay, Lynn.
You had a discussion at last week's meeting about adding the liaison guidelines. So
right.
we brought draft copies with the changes that were discussed last week. Was it last week that we
It met? Was just last week.
Okay,
that we
so that
here.
Could be maybe that should be at the end.
At the end
we
of
also
the
need to switch two of the presentations due to time constraints. So to swap B and C.
Okay.
If those changes
so
are all
we'll
right.
We'll come before Community Foundation. Is that fine with the audience? Okay, that's great. Okay. So the agenda now is the Youth Assessment Center, GROW, Community Foundation, Dream House, followed at the end by the liaison assignment document that was up for discussion last week. Great. Can we have approval of the agenda? Great. All aye. We're all in favor, right? Great. All right. Well, then let's move on and invite our Youth Assessment Center presenters. Would you introduce yourselves again? We look forward to hearing your presentation. I think we're assuming that presentations are about 15 to 20 minutes with some Q&A. Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for having us. I'm Lisa Benson from the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. I'm the Community Services Director.
And I'm Jonathan Westfield, and I'm the coordinator for the Youth Assessment Center.
So we've put together a presentation that will guide through what we want to present to you this evening. And obviously at the end, we will entertain any questions that you may have. So starting with a history with the Youth Assessment Center and the work that we do, one of the things that I'll say, I'm going to add a disclaimer. Jonathan and I have not been through all of this history, so some of you may even have more history than we have, but we've hit some highlights. Victim Offender Reconciliation Program was a grassroots community program that started as a not-for-profit using balanced and restorative justice principles for first-time youth offenders. And out of that actually grew the beginnings of our court diversion services that then transformed into the Youth Assessment Center. So they were seeking some organizational efficiencies and better connection with other county offices such as the state's attorney and sheriff, and they partnered with the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission to develop a research project. So those were very early stages in a much smaller program. The positive recidivism outcomes that were demonstrated then drew CCRPC applying for quarter-cent public safety funds that supported the court diversion services that were countywide, but a much smaller program than what is now the Youth Assessment Center. In 2013, the Youth Assessment Center was developed. The idea was to provide greater engagement for the day and evening police drop-offs with the police and expand services to early screening and connections for youth not involved with police interaction, so expanding services. The early years really focused on development of a countywide and a very robust work with the police. In the last couple years, we've really started to branch off more into the community services. So the Youth Assessment Center is the primary point of entry for a coordinated system of care for youth that are at risk for involvement in the justice system. So I like to focus on the fact that it's, you know, a lot of the work has really focused on youth that the police encounter and bringing them to the Youth Assessment Center for diversion. But we also are there for any youth that's exhibiting any kind of behavioral issues. The idea also is diversion, with the idea if these issues continued, there's the chance that the police could encounter them. The Youth Assessment Center provides countywide coverage, and we strive to connect youth with tools they need to be resilient, resourceful, responsible, and restored to positive community involvement. Sorry about the formatting here. So services. The services that we provide at the Youth Assessment Center. One of the things that's primary is any youth that comes to the Youth Assessment Center is provided evidence-based screening using, is it on? It's not on? Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now? Sorry about that. So we use an evidence-based screening tool, the YASI. It's the Youth Assessment Screening Instrument. With that tool, we then take the results that include both strengths and needs. So it's looking at what are the strengths in the youth and their family, but also any areas of need. From that, then they work to connect them resources to address the needs or further strengthen strengths that they have. Some of the resource connections that we currently use and that we connect with, Parenting with Love and Limits is a key, counseling services, mentoring, general anger management, youth employment training programs, community service options, and substance use services. Those are just examples. You know, it's very individualized based on what the screening tool outputs with regard to each youth. Supportive case management services are provided to the youth, motivational interviewing, balanced and restorative justice practices, and community engagement. So these are services provided through the Youth Assessment Center. So balanced and restorative justice practices, that is a key to the work that we do at the Youth Assessment Center. The principles support accountability, maintaining community safety, and increasing the competency of the youth that we're serving. Through some of the examples of the balanced and restorative practices that are implemented through the Youth Assessment Center, court diversion services for youth on station adjustment. So if the police refer a youth to be diverted from formal justice, they are put on a station adjustment, and we do court diversion services. We provide peer court, victim offender reconciliation mediation, and reflection groups. So these are examples of some of the balanced and restorative justice practices through the Youth Assessment Center. So justice diversion referrals, this is just a sampling of when kids are referred to the Youth Assessment Center related to infractions, encounters with the law enforcement. This is a data element on what the common themes are. You'll see the highest referral is related to theft, second being assault and battery related situations. We also see a number of property crimes, drug related or substance use related, and then society related. Jonathan, do you want to describe a little bit about what society related? I know that might be a question.
Society related incidents would involve status offenses, a juvenile being picked up for a curfew violation or for being a runaway. This would also include disorderly conduct, issues of that nature. And if you'll notice that of all those in their percentages, the lowest is drugs, which is surprising to a lot of people that drugs aren't as prevalent of an issue in juveniles in terms of delinquency.
So bringing it down to one of the key reasons we're here. So part of the YAC companion grant from the Champaign County Mental Health Board really allows us and focuses in on the services at the YAC, but providing more intensive services for youth that have repetitive police referrals. So our proposal to the Mental Health Board has been and continues to be those youth that have repeat referrals, we want to be able to do an in more depth service to them, and this allows us to do such. Longer-term case management and support. The idea is that, you know, youth that come to us, we get a large number of referrals. We get a large number of youth. Those kids that have repetitive referrals and then are screened to have higher risk, we want to make sure more firmly that they're connected to services. So it's a warmer handoff. You know, we keep our hands around them and we continue to meet with them regularly until the referral and the service is made and it's connected. And then also training and support of staff experience in behavioral health. So year to date, this is data. First off, I've mentioned, you know, the unduplicated number of youth that we see at the Youth Assessment Center is 231 to date at this year, so the first two quarters. The treatment plan clients, so this is the terminology that the Mental Health Board uses. So the treatment plan clients served through this grant, there's 23 of them. Mm-hmm. July to present, yeah. Basing it off your fiscal year and the grant. So the treatment plan clients, this is in our application, but I wanted to highlight it for you. The treatment plan clients are the youth that have had more than one referral event. They are screened and scored to have a moderate to a high risk score. They're provided service referrals, linkages, and intensive support case management, supportive case management. And they have adjusted diversion plan, again, if they're a police-related referral. Our non-treatment plan clients, NTPCs, there were seven. These are the youth that have had, again, a repetitive referral. They're assessed to have no risk or low risk on the YASI, which indicates that they really shouldn't be overtreated. So there's research that shows individuals that have low or no risk, sometimes by treating them, that can have not so good outcomes. So these are youth that we provide service, but they're not provided necessarily treatment referrals. So they are provided supportive case management, and again, if they had a police contact involved, it's a justice diversion plan. And then service contacts, youth with more than one referral and unable to contact or engage. So these are the youth that we receive referrals for, and we're trying to actively engage, but as we all know, with some, we're not able to get them all in. So performance goals. As stated in the application, diverting youth from court adjudication within 1 year of service, decrease in level of risk scores, and successful linkages to recommended services. So the outcomes. 97% of youth served in the YAC have had no juvenile court adjudications to date in 2017. We're going to be looking at the data from 2017 to 18 soon and have those also tabulated. 100% of youth with a moderate to high risk score have been provided service referrals. 56% of the youth that were engaged in services, 56% of youth engaged in the services they were referred. So kids that were referred to services, 56 of them have actually engaged in those services. And 58% of the youth who engage in referred services actually completed those services. Successes that we feel like we've had to date. Engage stakeholders. We have a lot of engagement from the local police departments. We have mental health board representatives on our youth advisory panel. We have not-for-profit, social service entities, the schools, you know, jumping down to the bottom point, community support. As we've talked about recently, we actually have a donation for our new facility. So we're garnering more understanding of what we're doing in the community and getting that support. We have a large number of volunteers through peer court. We have youth that volunteer for peer court. We have student interns that work at the Youth Assessment Center. We have a variety of individuals that actually do mediation. So there's the stakeholders related to the Youth Assessment Center is the community at large, but obviously there's key stakeholders also. We've been under development of operations agreements with the local law enforcement and school districts, just really solidifying exactly what we're doing with law enforcement that really helps them to understand and the community and us. You know, we've been doing the work, but it's good to have a very firm understanding of what everybody's role is. And then with the school districts, we're diving in more with the school districts, and you'll see in the next slide things that we hope to accomplish. So the work with the school district is is key to the work that we hope to do in the future. Implementation of restorative justice practices, you know, I went over that in a previous slide. We're also working on community education and involvement with restorative justice. We held the recent Restorative Justice 101, and we're in the process of looking to continue to educate the community and involve them, which also lends to the Youth Assessment Center in additional volunteers for mediation and peer court. And I talked about community support. So next steps for the Youth Assessment Center. We hope to increase family, school, and community referrals. Continue to reduce recidivism. So as you heard, you know, we have repeat referrals. We hope to impact that. I don't think that we'll necessarily eliminate that, but that's always a key for us, is to continue to reduce the recidivism. Refinement of performance outcome measures. We're engaging in logic modeling currently, and we're looking to enhance data collection tools. Refining what we're able to do with the data that we have through the YASI, and implementing other tools to collect data. We're happy to be one of the recipients through the Mental Health Board, working with the University of Illinois on some of that. So it's key to some of this. Increased partnership with the schools, school-based youth assessment services. So we hope to actually get into the schools and work more collaboratively with them about behavioral issues that they may be encountering, so that we can have that partnership and continue to impact youth through the schools. Continuing to support education and training. I talked about that with the restorative justice. And then increase resources to address youth and family needs. So, you know, one of the things that we sometimes struggle with is we see that there's a need with a certain family, but the resource on the other end to address that need. Sometimes there's gaps in services, right? We all know that. So we're hoping to be a part of developing additional resources in the community through collaboration. You know, for example, right now I'm in discussions with a local entity about partnering to bring a specific training to our area around moral recognition therapy. It's an evidence-based therapy that's done locally with adults, but we're hoping to input that with youth locally. So we're doing that work.
Things that you want to share also, Jonathan, before we do questions?
Okay. We're done.
Yeah, I had a question several slides back when you're talking about numbers. You want to go back to the numbers?
That one?
How many referrals? So you had 231 unduplicated youth referred, and then your treatment and non-treatment plan clients and service contacts don't come anywhere close to 231. So what do those numbers mean?
So the Youth Assessment Center serves all kids regardless of repeat referrals. So we have a number of youth that come to us just a first time offender, we'll say. They've had an infraction. I don't like to necessarily use that word, but it's an easy one that comes out. They're referred. Specific to the funds that we receive through the mental health grant, I focused in on duplicative referrals. So that's why that number drops. But I think it's important to show the large number of youth that are served at large.
Yes, it's very important because when, for example, me as an uneducated board member looks and sees there's only like 50 people being served, I'm like, what's going on? But obviously you're serving a lot of people. It's just there's some, what you're looking at, these repeat ones are the higher risk.
Right. So specific to the funds at the Mental Health Board and the application, it's drilling down specifically on repeat offenders.
Okay, so those other people are getting services and going their way, and you never see them again after they get handed off to services, other services?
Or? They're not as intensively served. We monitor diversion programs that can be anywhere from 3 to 6, you know, months.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful.
Yeah. I just wondered, you're moving or have moved to Round Barn, right? Is that making, does that have an impact on people getting to you at all? Is it easier or harder, or does it make any difference that you've changed that?
So we haven't moved yet. The plan is to go through the moving process the last week in March and then be fully up and going Monday, April 2nd. So I can't answer the impact. My hope is that it won't have a great deal of impact. It's a very easy, accessible site. We also do community-based work. So if there were an individual or a family that is unable to get to the Youth Assessment Center, we'd go to them. The other thing is, you know, as I talked about, we really hope to do more work in the schools, go to where the kids are.
I have a question, and it's if you could go forward another slide. It's the one, this one, yes. So anyone with a high-risk assessment is referred, and of those referred, slightly more than half follow through. And of those that follow through with a referral, again, slightly more than half finish. So you're down to about, if you had 100, 56 would engage, and of the 56 that engaged, really about half of that would finish. Would that be appropriate?
I think so.
Okay. So what happens to the youth who engage and then just stop engaging? Is it because they get into deeper problems, or they are typical teenagers who say, well, this was good for a while, but I'm done? Or
so quick clarifier, just to make sure we're talking the same thing. So when the 56% engage in services they were referred, so for instance, if we referred and linked an individual to PLL, so what we're tracking and looking at is, so we made this referral, did they engage? And then if they engaged, did they finish that service?
Right.
So we're on the same?
Right.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
And about half of them finish, slightly more than half of them finish that service. Right.
Yes.
And are there factors that help to motivate completion or support completion, or is it friendly, warm handoff and good luck?
So in answering your exact question, the work that we do with the staff, you know, and continuing to monitor and support and engage them and encourage them. We also have relationships with school resource officers, or if there's officers in the community, if this is a referral for a youth that's involved with, you know, a station adjustment, they also do encouragement and they understand what their diversion plan is. And if they encounter them, say, in the schools, they'll reinforce that work. There was something else I thought of.
There's also scheduling issues.
Many times with a lot of the juveniles, it's scheduling issues, and that it's not just the juvenile, just not the child, the youth that's involved. It's also the parent, and the parent may have a conflict with this. And it's one of these issues that, you know, we will work with the family and with the service provider to find some way to this. And sometimes we're unable to, but there's always the option for rescheduling at a later date if the family so chooses.
I remember what else I was going to say. So motivation. The idea with a station adjustment is indeed so that they're diverted from the formal justice system. In and of itself, that's part of the motivation. The idea is that, you know, we're working to address the accountability and the balance and restorative justice by completing the station adjustment and completing some of this work. You divert actually being charged in court or having to potentially be adjudicated. Sorry, most simple one I forgot.
I understand this. What is the 97%? Sorry, the 97% refers to the 30 kids who are getting served, or what was it referred to?
So what we did is we looked at any youth that received service through the Youth Assessment Center in 2016. So we took all those youth and compared to
how
the states.
Many of them are we, is that 231 or?
I'd have to pull out my data sheets. I don't think it ties specifically to the 231.
The 231 is for the fiscal year.
Okay, so I don't understand what that 97% means.
So 90%. So youth. So I'll just tell you how we came to that. All of the youth that were served at the Youth Assessment Center.
What does that mean? Were served.
So we screened them. We provided a service to them. We screened them. We worked with them to engage with services. They may or may not have even engaged in the next level of service, but we actually.
So you may have referred mm-hmm. quite a few of them to other mm-hmm. places. So that's okay. So that's you're referring to 97% of anybody that you've had contact with.
Yes. And so.
Okay. So what about the now? Tell me something, so I can understand the treatment plan clientele. Who are the more high risk, and the non-treatment plan, who are multiple contacts with whoever refers them, and but not high risk, but according to the YASI. Do I understand that right? That's the difference between the TPC and the NTPC.
Yes.
Is the YASI score.
Yes.
So could you just say a few words that would tell me an example of a kid from each of those groups?
I'll turn that to you.
So a juvenile that a youth that hits at the moderate or high risk level may have a lot of risk factors.
Is that one?
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm just not right up on it. A youth that scores at a moderate or high risk level on the YASI is one that has several indicators that there are issues potentially with the family, with their social interactions with their friends, could potentially be drug use or other items that they score high in their social interactions. Those that are at a low risk, no to low risk, are those who, for the most part, they may have one flag that indicates that there may be an issue with family, but it may not be so pronounced that there are glaring problems. So, and that's where you see the difference in it. Many kids fall in that no to low risk area.
Thanks for coming out tonight. Sorry, I was running a little late. I might have missed it, but where are these referrals made to that you refer the children to?
So there's just a sampling, depending, again, on an individualized screening result from that. So let's say a screening result shows that there's some family conflict or some unresolved issues within the family. Parenting love and limits would be a good opportunity for such thing. We make referrals for general counseling, mentoring, anger management, youth employment training programs, community service. We support that oftentimes through the Youth Assessment Center, and then substance use services. Again, if any resource in the community that might get at, you know, what they're presenting issue or the flagged issue.
Okay. And do you guys ever make referrals to SAS?
Yes.
Yeah, is that, like, how frequently would you say that? Kids who are referred to you are then referred to SAS.
I wouldn't say it's that. So it'd be behavioral health crisis intervention services. Some people refer to it as the CARES line. SAS Choices has been a key provider of the services locally for crisis behavioral health. Sometimes kids are already involved with Choices when they come to us, and we would then coordinate. I wouldn't say we have a high number of kids that come in crisis behavioral mode to where we call them in, but it happens here and there.
And did you have a slide that showed the like a chart of like the sources of referrals to you guys?
We don't. We did put in one specific to some of the infractions that kids that are referred through the police, what we're seeing.
Okay. Do you know what portion are referred through police or are like walk-ins or referred through the school?
94% of our referrals come through law enforcement agencies. 6% come from schools, community, family referrals. And that's why when we were looking at, you know, our future goals, that we want to develop a greater relationship, partnership with schools so that we can actually see those numbers start to change. We would rather get more from the community and schools instead of catching them at the point where they're in heavy crisis. If we can work with youth to address early signs of crisis and get them on track before they become issues of delinquency, I mean, that's what we're striving to do.
Okay. I guess the last question, and I hope this is not a too, like, complicated question, but so when people are, you said it's 94% through police, are these kids who are having police contact in the community or their schools, or if there's a breakdown of that you might know?
It varies. If it's a police contact, so it can be one that does occur during the school day in which an incident occurred at the school that they could refer, or it could be one that's outside in the community. Right. So there's no set standard of when or where. It's if it's a police contact.
Okay. And what are your guys' hours of operation? Is it?
Mondays we are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, it is 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. And Saturdays we are noon until 10 p.m.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. We're really running out of time before the next presentation, and I think it was a time constraint. So are there any, Lynn's withdrawn her question. Are there any other pressing questions?
My question and what
you're going to be involved in the schools, which I feel is a positive thing, but what is your role going to be interacting in the school as a trainer?
So, you know, we're working towards that. You know, we're working on some operations agreements with the schools in general about referrals and what we can do to assist them in issues that they see in the school. My hope is that we would what that would look like actually working in the schools is to have on-site office hours in the schools to engage youth maybe that are already in our services and be a support, also be a support in the school if behavioral issues would come up, that then we're right there and can respond. Again, these are our hopes. We're just going to work with the schools and see if we can get it accomplished. I'm hopeful. We definitely have key educational stakeholders involved and at the table with us, so we're in discussion. Schools are, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in schools, so they have to meet their educational requirements, and we understand that. We want to be a support to them and also then help youth. So,
okay, one final question from Dr. Moore.
I couldn't tell what the demographics of the kids are that you serve. Do you know what they are? But they didn't say that, right? Is that something that wasn't said?
No, we don't carry those numbers with us. And it's more so that any youth in crisis, we work to address, and we work to meet those needs. And if those are, if that's information that the board would like, I mean, it's something that we could provide.
Okay, Lynn, very quickly, because we need to move on to grow.
They're required to provide it with their quarterly reports to us, so I did get it off of our online system.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
And that's going to be specific to the repetitive youth. We do have some data charts regarding youth at large through the Youth Assessment Center. Just real quick, it is more heavily male. I know that off the top of my head.
They would range between the age of 15 and 17.
I hope you do get into the schools and you can replace the SRO, because there are a bunch of people that really object to having police officers in the school. So keep working on that.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It obviously created a great deal of interest and questions. Appreciate your coming here. So we'll move on to GROW. And three presenters, I believe. We have Charlene. You have to push it on. Charlene Gulbranson. Thank you. And Chris Storr. And do we have a third presenter? Karen Chan.
There we go. Okay, so my name is Charlene Gulbranson, and I'm the National Program Coordinator for GROW. And GROW is a 12-step community-based mental health support program. We came to Illinois in 1978. We received state funds for about 30 years, and in 2015, we lost our funding when the state decided to change the way they do business. So we turned to the Champaign County Mental Health Board to help fund a part-time field work position, which Karen Chan fills. I'm just going to do a summary of the development in the area and what we've been working on, and then Chris is going to present the results of the most recent survey we did in the Champaign County area. So we have added two groups. We've added a weekly orientation at Provena Hospital. So we go up once a week and meet with the patients that are hospitalized, let them know that there is support when they are released, if they'd like to come to a GROW group. And then we did open a community group in Rantoul. So we have a total of four groups in the area, which includes those two new groups. We had already had a community group that met in Champaign at the Presbyterian Church, and we have a group meeting in the Champaign County Jail. And I sent along our monthly activity report, our monthly tabulation report. If you have any questions about that, we can answer those at the end. I would like to say that we are meeting weekly. Karen and myself are meeting weekly with the U of I students to build and refine GROW's evaluation process. We're working on the logic model, modeling right now. I'm very happy with what's coming out of those meetings and hope to really improve our evaluation of the program. We also had a meeting the other day, and we are looking forward to partnering with the Alliance for Inclusion and Respect at the Ebert Festival this year. And we are having a cultural and linguistic training in March and planning a GROW education and discussion group for GROW group members, and their family and community will be invited as well. That'll happen in Rantoul sometime in May. So Chris is going to review the survey results.
Thank you, Charlene. I work with Karen Chan as at the Champaign County Satellite Jail, where we meet weekly with inmates.
We've already discussed the GROW and its methods and its goals. In the winter of 2018, the GROW asked members of the groups to fill out a survey, and this should not be considered to be a complete inventory of all of the members, because at least at the satellite jail, we get rotating groups of that participate because of different reasons. The distribution of people in the groups is bimodal, as you can see. It ranges from long-term people who've been in the program for a few years and to those who have participated only a short time. The you'll notice that the armed forces is folks that have served in the armed forces is overrepresented from about 7% of the adult population in the United States. We have as many as 18% here in the Champaign County area. The many of the people that participated in the program have had some mental health, have sought help, professional mental health, and have come to GROW in part through that. One of the things that I particularly like about the GROW program is that is how you could see by comparing the two pie charts at the top about hospitalizations. Several of the many of the people that have participated in the GROW program have, about half of them have had some sort of hospitalization. But if you look on the right, change in participating in the GROW program has caused folks to have a lesser need for hospitalization or even no further hospitalization. It helps people stay on their medication and better use their medication. And I'd also point out that that many of the growers are not, this is not a necessarily a lifelong commitment, but the idea is to recover to the point where you can resume participation in society with your family and employment, gainful employment, which is the ethnic demographics are very similar to what you might find with in the United States with regards to ethnic distribution. We're slightly more over represented by females, a lot of middle aged people, mostly in the 40s and 50s. And you've seen some of these other charts, but the one on the lower right is very gratifying. Many of the people that participate in the program feel that they've recovered or developed enough coping skills to kind of return to employment. This is a particularly interesting chart because I'll pick out a few things from here. About a quarter of the participants that participated in the assessment said that they overcame thoughts of suicide and self-abuse. That's pretty good. About a third of them said that they were recovered from mental illness. That's really good. That's what we're going for. This is, we want people to move through the program and get on with their lives. 41% said that they had hope of recovery. Again, this is working with peer-to-peer counseling and groups. We kind of help each other towards recovery from mental illness. And a quarter said that they no longer needed their disability and obtained employment. I just pulled that out of these and as something that I found particularly notable. That's all I have for the presentation.
Yes, questions.
Thank you for the comprehensive data. And I think one of the questions I would have is you had 17 people fill out the survey. How many people do you have in the different, I know everybody doesn't fill out a survey. How many individuals do you have totally? And I know groups are fluid, but who are coming to the groups within the different four sites, please? And I might have missed that if you're going to add to the presentation. Sorry if I jumped.
No, I don't. It wasn't in the presentation. It's in the tabulation sheet there. But
it averages per month between 16 to 25 people per month that come through the come to us.
An interesting thing that Karen did do that, which wasn't a part of the tabulation that I sent to you. Karen, why don't you give them that cost?
Okay. I put in, I don't know if you noticed, but on the second sheet of our tabulations, we have an area where we could put in our cost and our cost effectiveness of the program. And I hadn't done it before, and I just did it when I was playing around with these. And I put in the $20,000 from
the board.
And I came up with... For January, the groups spent per hour $34.72 to help people. And then if you break it down to per person, it's $6.55 for the month of December that we use to help people. Per hour, per person. Per person, per hour, $6.55.
And we'll include this cost information
to you for the next one.
I can send it to you, Margaret.
If you send it to Mark or Lynn,
yeah. Okay.
The board will get it. Ann.
Thank you for your presentation. I just have a couple questions about the GROW philosophy because I have heard about it, but I don't know as much about it as I would like to know. You say it's peer counseling, so it's not professional. It's peers helping peers, and based on AA and NA self-help principles. So the question I have is, what is the general attitude in groups about psychiatric medication and people taking psychiatric medication?
Well, we do not discuss medication in group at all because we're not professionals. If there is a question or concern that comes up, if a person brings something up about medication, we refer them back to their doctor. Unless they say, I've just started a new medication and it's making me really tired and I'm having trouble getting out of bed, there's a part of the program that we would ask them to use, you know, I can compel my limbs and muscles to act rightly in spite of the way I feel. So we would give them that practical task and then, you know, advise them if it's still a concern to them to talk to their doctor about it.
I believe that you have a tremendous amount of very detailed information on exactly how the groups operate and what sort of information people give to one another and philosophy and so on. So I'm going to guess that if we're interested in looking at material, you would be able to provide it for people. Is that right?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Yes, we have a lot. We have a lot of written material, a lot of it, but we mainly use what we call our blue book in our weekly meeting, and then we have a group method, which is the structure of the meeting. And then we have another book that we do our reading, our objective reading from. So if anybody's interested in looking at those materials, I can certainly get them to you.
Thank you.
Other questions, Jack?
Yeah, have you thought about working with the last group that came in here?
I thought of it as they were speaking.
Because I know in 2015, you guys had done kind of a community survey of trying to get youth involved in this, and I was involved in the conversation at that time, so.
Yes. So, yeah, we did develop a program for youth. And yes, so as they were speaking, I was thinking that that would be a good place to maybe get that program in use.
Could I follow along with something?
Yeah.
It wasn't asked, but I'll add on to that is that we're reaching out to veterans groups and to restorative justice reentry programs, especially first followers.
When you're at your meetings, is it all age groups that are at the same meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're adult meetings. They're adult meetings, so
okay.
it's 18 and older.
And you're
older.
Looking at doing youth?
Yes.
Okay, and is it limited to the person with the problem, or do they bring in their
it's for
family
them.
Type? It's closed
no, it's for them. They can always bring in a family member. To visit the group, visitors are allowed up to three times, and otherwise it's for the person, and they would come on their own.
Okay.
We discourage family members from coming to the same group
okay.
because someone may be having problems
yeah.
with that family member.
And I just have a simple question. What does GROW stand for?
It's not an acronym.
Okay. Okay.
I swear it'll be two. Thanks for coming out tonight, guys. Chris, he's very humble. He did not let you guys know he's one of our county board members. I'm just very distracted by the fact that that's not an acronym. But
it does stand for, though, a growth, personal growth
yeah.
to maturity and recovery.
We're just not used to
no.
words that are actually mean what they mean.
No.
So my question is, and I didn't see in the slides, but sorry if I missed if you said, where are you guys physically doing this besides, I know that you had mentioned at the jail system.
Yeah, so we go into the hospital, we go into the jail, and then we go into community places that will allow us free space. So the Champaign group is meeting at the Presbyterian Church in Champaign, and the Rantoul group is meeting at the Methodist Church in Rantoul. So we look for places that will allow us to hold a group. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Oops, sorry. Okay, so we're moving on to the Community Foundation Dream House. And we have Tracy Dace.
I'm never good with technology, so I'm going to just speak from the PowerPoint, if that's okay with everyone.
Sure.
All right, cool.
We've got your PowerPoint.
All right, thank you. Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm very grateful and honored to really to be here. I want to just thank everyone for supporting Dream House. I left the boys tonight to come here, and so I left about 40 boys engaged in drumming and social-emotional learning groups, nutrition. So we're really trying to impact and develop healthy young boys so they can not go to the Youth Assessment Center at some point in their life, and just really be a source of support for them and also their families. So I just wanted to, again, say thank you for doing this for our community, to really set our boys up for socio-emotional and academic success. So I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about Dream House and give you a summary of what we're doing. So DREAM is an acronym for Driven to Reach Excellence in Academic Achievement for Males. I really have worked hard to develop this as a community, school, and church partnership to create a village for our boys to be successful. Again, thank you for the funding from the Mental Health Board, because the expansion that we've experienced over the past year could not have happened without this support. So I really appreciate that. And also, when we started to work and develop Dream House, we looked at the existing programs in the community and really found that there was a gap. We needed more early interventions and preventive programs to really support our kids as they develop into older teens and young men. And also making sure that what we do is evidence-based, culturally responsive, because we work primarily with African-American boys and their families. We wanted to ensure that that particular element was a part of what we do. And having worked with Access Initiative and many other entities like Champions in the community, I was concerned that we had to have a trauma-informed component to what we do. And so that's a part of it. And also making sure that what we design and also redesign is data-driven. So we look at their academic outcomes in school. We look at their suspension rates. We talk with families so that as we are designing and redesigning this program, we are using data to guide those decisions. And another element of this work is really looking at how do we engage boys in a way at an early age so that they have the skill set and the set of resources in order to move along a school to college pipeline instead of a school to prison pipeline. And so looking at gang research, and we know that boys join gangs because they want to belong to something, they want to have that extended family. So how do we create, you know, a positive gang for our kids to be a part of in some ways, right? How do we create this pipeline so that these boys at the age of 5 are a part of a positive experience that's going to impact their lives until they exit 12th grade. So we do that through this cohort-based, year-round, dosage-intensive program. So boys enter the Dream House pipeline at the age of 5 by cohort, and then they receive 5 components along the way. Over time, we hope to then see some more positive outcomes. So let's flip to the next slide. Wanted to show, if you use the color slide, you'll get a chance to see some of the pictures that I've provided. And so what you see there is boys in Dream House cohort number 3. So we've had 3 cohorts of boys in Champaign who have come through and still a part of the program today. So those are boys in cohort number 3. So an overview of our history, the Champaign pilot was implemented in July 2015. We had 10 boys complete that pilot, and 3 years later, 8 of those 10 boys are still in the Dream House. So we have 8 of those boys who are now second graders who are still in the Dream House. So that's that pipeline where we are engaging them and developing those socio-emotional and academic skills over time. Last year, due to some funding, with the Mental Health Board and also the Community Foundation, we had an expansion to Rantoul. And so we had a pilot that we implemented there in July 2017 in Rantoul. We completed 10 boys in that particular pilot, and I want to say six of those boys are still in the Dream House. And Rantoul is very enthusiastic about what we're doing, and we plan to return there to bring in another cohort of boys in the summer. And because this work is so critical, because this work is meeting a huge community need, Urbana Schools has also engaged and partnered with Dream House. And so we have the great opportunity at this point to start a pilot in Urbana next month. And so in March, Dream House will be in all three districts in the county. So that increases our, I'm just honored by the support for our kids. And so Dream House is going to be in Urbana. And so when we implement these programs, we definitely use five core components. When we think about this year-round support for them, we have a summer jumpstart program, after-school program. We provide mentoring within the program and also athletic activities on Saturday. And we are in partnership with Carl Hospital to develop our family engagement component. So we know that we can't not just provide interventions and resources to kids. We have to really include the family in this process. The next slide, I provided some data for you to kind of quantify this countywide impact. So right now, if we look from August to February, the Mental Health Board funding has supported six boys in Rantoul, in the kindergarten program there, 10 boys here in Champaign, and then at BTW, and I must tell you, I have my hands full. We have 45 boys in first through fifth grade at BTW. And so we are definitely at capacity, and we're stretching the dollars, and we're stretching the energy, and there is a waiting list for more kids and more parents want their kids in Dream House. And then we are projected to work with 20 to 30 boys once we start the pilot in Urbana. So our dream boys are bright, they're eager, they're creative, they're busy, yet they also are struggling in school and at home. Many of them are fatherless, and some of those fathers are incarcerated. They come from high-risk neighborhoods. We've been able to engage and work with boys who have immigrant backgrounds, so their parents are second language learners, and some of the boys have been in that situation as well. Single parent homes, but we have a very optimistic viewpoint that despite these challenges, these boys are also our future leaders, and we want to support them in their development. So we have another picture here of boys. These boys were also in cohort three. And so this was at our graduation. Each summer we have a summer program graduation, so the boys get a chance to start celebrating at a very early age. And so what we've done with the pipeline is that we're trying to really, you know, when you think about pre-K to 12th grade, that's a very long time. So right now we're segmenting the pipeline so that we are addressing those particular needs at each developmental phase. So what I'm going to talk about right now is the kindergarten success program. So that includes when boys are five in our summer pre-K program, and then they transition to our after-school program while they're in kindergarten. So that's what we're calling the kindergarten success program. And so we have programs at Stratton, and we also have a program at Rantoul, and those boys only attend twice a week. So they get services 2 days out of the week in those two particular programs. And we focus on academics, so we know that literacy is so linked to later juvenile delinquency and other negative outcomes. So we want to make sure those boys are reading at or above grade level and also doing math at that level or above. And we have a strong emphasis on social-emotional support. It's very troubling. I don't know if any of you have had a chance to be in schools lately. But it's very troubling what's happening with our young people, with our children. and their lack of social-emotional development and competence and how that interferes with their learning and their ability to make healthy peer relationships. So we do a lot of work around emotional literacy, building healthy friendship skills, because we know that they are not deficit of friendship skills, but we want to strengthen what's existing. And because we have such a beautiful cohort of diversity in our kindergarten programs, we also focus on cross-cultural communication and diversity within that. And because we know that after school can't necessarily be school, we do also do some project-based learning through Cub Scouts and other entities to support what we're doing. And we have volunteer support through interns and U of I students and other community people who have come on board to rock the Dream House with us. And we make a special effort to engage our families. For instance, we do camping trips, and parents come on those camping trips. They just don't use us for free babysitting. They do attend and stay the night. So we help to create those memories for families through what we're doing at the Dream House. So the second segment or phase of the pipeline is what I call the Dream Achievers. So this is the group of boys at BTW who are first through fifth grade. So these are some pictures of some of the programming that we've done. We've had art leadership days where we bring in a male from the community to do a leadership talk, and then we combine that with some type of art activity. So this is a day that we did art leadership, and the boys were painting. And then the second picture right there is students from the University of Illinois College of Engineering who came over to do some STEM activities. And if you see that guy in the back picture there in the checkered shirt, that is a dad. So we have fathers and mothers who are volunteering in the after-school program. So we're really trying to create a family atmosphere in what we're doing with the Dream House. So overview of the Dream Achievers component is we're housed at BTW, as I mentioned before, first through fifth grade, and that's the primary source of where this funding is going right now. And then we plan to add programs at King Elementary and Dr. Williams, which are in Urbana, hopefully next month, to serve fourth and fifth graders. And in that particular component, what we're doing is the design of a middle school jumpstart program. So we are working with boys to get them ready for middle school, working with that socio-emotional piece so that they're more behaviorally aware of what middle school expectations are. So at BTW, we are there Monday through Friday from 3:15 to 6 o'clock. We, again, focus on literacy. It's just so important that our boys read, or that all our kids have, you know, good reading and literacy skills, academic success, and we also address a lot of socio-emotional and leadership and health areas, because we know the more that we provide in a comprehensive way, our outcomes will improve. And so when I started this work at BTW, I kind of use a traditional after-school model where kids are grouped by grades and then they kind of stay in those spaces and stay in those groups. But we found that because of the difficulties that our kids are struggling with as far as their behavior in their socio-emotional development, we've designed more of a variety of interventions. So we have a lot of small group opportunities. For instance, boys, about 10 boys, are engaged in martial arts. So it's not all 45. It's just those 10 boys who had issues with focus and discipline are in that particular one. We have other small groups through social workers who come in kind to do some small group around emotional regulation, those sorts of things. So we really try to use the data, what we see every day, what we experience and know from their Dream House experience and also the schools, to develop these small group interventions. Again, we have a diverse group of volunteers from U of I and other places, and we are trying to equip and engage parents and their caregivers to support their kiddos. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the summer. Last summer, we served over 100 boys from pre-K to eighth grade. We had four program sites. It was a busy, busy, long summer. 2018, we are planning to have summer programs again, hopefully with the support of the Mental Health Board. Our theme is Around the World in 30 Days, so we're going to use geography and global diversity as the mechanism to teach social-emotional skills and also literacy. And so due to the fact that the First Presbyterian Church gifted Dream $60,000, $20,000 over 3 years to get this started, this is the last year of that $20,000. We're going to have to decrease our numbers for summer because we're losing a huge amount of money from our funding stream. So we're projected to serve 80 kids this summer, and we're going to decrease the grade level as well and only do pre-K to sixth grade, and then we'll have 3 program sites. And so I'm very excited that one of these program sites will be Parkland College. They have come on as a partner to what we're doing. So for 6 weeks, our boys will be at Parkland on a college campus, being aware of this is their possibility, this is their future. Evaluation. We also are very appreciative to the fact that we are part of the Evaluation Capacity Project funded by this board. So we're working with those individuals to develop a thorough evaluation plan so that we are looking at the socio-emotional, academic, and program effectiveness outcomes of what we're doing. We are currently collecting data using the Strengths and Difficulties questionnaire, which was a questionnaire that I was exposed to through Access Initiative, and it's very useful in being able to identify some of those socio-emotional and behavioral needs that our kids may exhibit. The boys, they love Dream House. They rock it every day. So our average daily attendance is very, very strong. They are there. If we don't have Dream House, if I walk in the building, they are asking me, why are we not having Dream House today? So our average daily attendance is 4 days a week. Stratton is 2 days. Rantoul is 2 days. So the boys and the parents are very supportive of what we're doing. As another outcome that we have seen an increase in developmental assets, particularly around having positive role models in the space and having positive role models in their lives, has been another positive outcome of what we're doing. There's a slide that has parent feedback. Feel free to read that at your leisure. Another slide also about our partners. Again, it's a school community faith-based collaboration. So we have church partnerships here in Champaign and Rantoul, and all the school districts and other entities are involved in the work that we're doing. So I also want to thank Lynn and Mark in, you know, supporting Dream House, particularly around as we are developing as a new agency. We're doing a lot of programmatic work very well, and we also now are focusing a lot of attention on the development of our nonprofit so that we can be sustainable and we can be around so that we can, when these boys reach 12th grade, Dream House is there as a part of their lives. So I provided for you a slide of our Board of Directors members, and I'm very proud of the board. I've worked to bring on people who are passionate and excited about this work. I'd like to point out that the founding board president is a Dream House parent, and so that was very important to me that we have parent voice in what we're doing. And another element of the board is that we have a young adult black male that's a product of Champaign Schools in college at Eastern, and he is a part of the board as well. So I wanted to have that parent and youth voice along with these other people who will help us to strengthen our organizational structure. So those are all the questions, all the comments that I have. And again, I just want to thank you for believing in a new organization, believing in a new program, and allowing us to be a part of the wonderful work that the Champaign County Mental Health Board is doing in this community. Thank you.
I think I have goosebumps. It's just great to hear how many children you've been able to serve and your plans for expanding.
Thank you.
I'm sure that we have a few questions, so I'm going to open it up. Dr. Moore.
I don't have a question.
A comment?
Yeah, I just have a comment. This slide that you have on a countywide impact.
Yes, sir.
And then it says, who are the dream learners?
Yes, sir.
My reading skills, which I should be in this class, but anyhow. What I think I would like
in your presentation is you guys start from a positive view about these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're failures, but just somehow how are you pulling out the best, mm-hmm. best in them. So when I go down this list, and you describe them as bright and creative, eager learners, they may be struggling in school at home, but the way you, I think the way you see them gives them an incredible chance of being even more successful than mm-hmm. they are, because they don't have to fight the battle of proving to the adult that they're worthy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think where you're starting is an incredible, a few steps up in these kids' lives, and I think you've done a great job.
Well, I appreciate it.
And I'd like to talk with you later about this.
Definitely. Thank you. Yeah. We also are seeing that the work that we're doing after school is also impacting how the teachers are viewing the boys now. And so some teachers are actually on their own time. They're not getting paid. They come down and help with homework during our Dream House time. So they're spending time outside of their teaching contract to work with our boys. And so that's been a really positive outcome of what we're doing, that impact on the school culture and climate.
So if I understand this, a lot of the activities are actually organized and delivered to the kids by volunteers. Is that correct?
No, we have staff. We have staff. And so so that's a great question, because I'm not a one-man show. We have, so through the Community Foundation grant that we received, the kindergarten sites have an actual certificated teacher. But that was a one-year grant, so we can't continue that because of the salary rates. And at the BTW site, I'm there as the site director or whatever. And then we have part-time people who work, who are the program leaders. But we know to do this work at the rate that we're doing, we have a large volume of volunteers who come in to support those part-time people.
I understand. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
This is wonderful. Like, I'm so excited about it. I really think it's awesome that you're using increasing developmental assets, which we mm-hmm. know when we increase developmental assets, we increase kids' chance of success. Are you, and thank you for the answering the staff question. That was one of my questions. Do you tie into any of the existing programs, or will you, when you start, for example, in Urbana, tie into the neighborhood connection?
That's a great question. We do use existing programs such as Boy Scouts, Extension, 4-H, and other existing service learning opportunities through the university. One of the things we did do this past summer as a way to connect with Urbana Neighborhood Connection, we had a field day experience. And so we invited Urbana over, and I think the Boys and Girls Club, but they didn't come. So it was an opportunity for agencies who work with kids during the summer to do a joint activity together. So as we move into Urbana, we hope to collaborate with Janice and also continue to support and collaborate with the club in other ways too.
Thank you, and thanks for the, this is just awesome work with kids. Thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I know it's one of the milestone observations that you with kindergarten and maybe middle school, I think you were thinking about doing a kind of a coming of age celebration with some of the kids as they get into middle school and things mm-hmm. like that, which I think would be very powerful for most kids, because it says that you have reached a milestone and we're celebrating you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just keep working on that and I'll be there.
All right, I appreciate that. Yeah, our fifth graders will be sixth grade in the fall, and so we are now thinking about what does that middle school segment of the pipeline will look like. How can we design it in a way that it's going to be sustainable? And so we definitely want to do some rites of passage types of things with those kiddos as they move through middle school, and we hope to be there in their lives to support their developmental growth.
I I think an important part of what you're discussing here is, and I don't hear people say it very much, is this the pipeline being from kindergarten to college as opposed to being incarcerated. And the first group of people, I don't know if they think like you do, so I hope you have some contact with that youth assessment center, because they may be focused pretty narrowly, and they need to have your focus if they're going to be successful in what, if they want to deal with that recidivism, you guys need to be talking to each.
Definitely. I mean, because we have.
Maybe you do. I don't.
No, we're not at this point, but I was like the GROW presenters, as they were speaking, the Youth Assessment Center, I was also kind of, my brain was turning, right, about what can we do. Because, you know, we have to face the realities. We can work with our young boys, you know, from kindergarten to fifth grade, but a couple of them are going to experience law enforcement contact. I mean, that's just a reality, right? And so it would be good to have those connections with entities like the Youth Assessment Center, because as our boys grow and develop and move along this pipeline, we're going to need as much support as possible to capture them and make sure they're successful.
One comment about that. I must say that I understand what you just said, but one of the most exciting things I thought you said was, and what we're trying to do is something. We don't want our kids to show up at the Youth Assessment Center.
We don't. No, trust me, we don't.
I think that's a really important attitude. And so I was very pleased. I wrote it down when you said it.
Yeah. I don't. But also, I've been in the community for 10 years. And so I know some of the realities that we also have to work to not make that happen. So, but thank you for reminding that the goal is not to go to the Youth Assessment Center. I appreciate that.
And if they do, they have a place to come back to.
They have a home. They have the dream house, a space for them to come back to and get the love and support to get back on track. So that's why we call it the dream house.
Thank you so much for your presentation. It was really inspiring and informative, and appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
I think we will move on now to the last item that was added to the agenda. You're welcome to stay if you're interested in our discussion of board liaison responsibilities.
Thank you,
thank you so much.
So he didn't think we were interested enough to stay?
Well, would you? Okay, Lynn, you've got...
Thank you, Judy. Well, the main thing that we worked on was just striking number 5 and replacing it with something else, which was just, these were, I believe, in 2004 intended to be guidelines, so we could, just guidelines that the board adopted for itself, so we could work on the tone of these to make them sound more like guidelines. Or, you know, I think Mark and I just kind of went through and cleaned up some things that we thought could be more clear, in addition to just completely changing number 5 to be about something else. So
number 5 now is multiple board members may share a liaison assignment, each informing the agency when they will attend an agency board meeting and taking care to comply with Open Meetings Act. Is that okay?
Seemed like that was kind of all we really needed to do. The rest was more cosmetic.
Yeah, so I guess off the table is the idea, which I think number 5 was originally getting at, of improper advocacy. You're just taking that out entirely. Okay. I had suggested to Stephanie that this should go into the packet that new board members get. So
We also talked about this being an action item at your March board meeting, mm-hmm. so that you would, it's still guidelines, mm-hmm. but you can approve it as guidelines in the March meeting, and then we would, you know, would carry it forward that, in that document.
All right.
Okay. And then Ann. Okay. I sort of had Elaine's thought that I thought that this was about us talking in to each other about programs and not trying to influence our vote. And that doesn't seem, this, what we have to me, doesn't seem to get at that. So we're letting that go. I don't have any problems with these people on this board. But I can imagine new people who haven't worked together thinking that this is a good reason to get on this board. And it seems to me whether we are going to behave that way or not, I see no reason that we should avoid at least having it mentioned that somehow at this board table, I guess I don't know how to do this. I guess what I'm thinking about is people calling each other on the phone before there's a vote. Not necessarily our discussions here, but influence in a whole different place because someone is involved with a particular agency that they like. I know because I know how I feel about it. I do think it's not good for people to develop out-of-board relationships around programs that they like. So, I mean, it's okay with me. I just, it doesn't fit what I thought we were trying to do. So.
Ann, did you want?
No, I didn't have anything to add to that. I do like the tone of this better, and since it's guidelines rather than an action item, do we really need to do anything, or?
So your comment about this could be a concern in the future is kind of consistent with something I've heard about other large 708 boards just moving away from the liaison practice completely. You're not obligated by mandate to do this. This has just been a traditional method of learning more about an agency than is practical through a 15-minute presentation. I don't have a great way to accomplish that outside of liaison assignments, but there's even one 708 board which has been advised to stop doing this because of exactly because of how asymmetrical and complicated the relationships could get and were getting. It's not, you know, it doesn't violate any law, but it makes the board service much harder. So that's just a comment.
Well, then it might be that this is not the document to put that in, but we could think about where to put a statement that board members are not advocates for agencies. And the reason I think so much about this is, and some of you have probably served on boards like this, I served on a funding panel at the state level for arts. And it turned out we represented the board members' different applications. But on that board, people made relations with those boards outside the board meeting, and then there was horse trading that went on. I'll vote to fund your people, or I'll vote to up the funding of your, or if you will vote for mine. Well, we don't have enough money, so where do we take the money out? We take it out of downstate programs, because everybody knows that all the important arts are in Chicago. So this was, you know, a terrible thing that was business as usual. Of course, it was Illinois politics. But because I have experienced that, and I saw downstate agencies get gutted by those alliances that were formed, or I'll publish your essay if you'll, you know, help me fund my journal. All kinds of things happened. And so that's why I think somewhere in our documentation of what we're about here, I would like to see just a bland statement defining, putting that into part of a definition of what we do as a board.
So, in my opinion, that's not the kind of thing that we can actually formally legislate. I think it has to do with the creation of a board culture. I think legally, outside conversations do have to meet the Open Meetings Act requirements, which means I think what we can talk to what one other person? I can't remember. At a time. I understand you could go talk to everybody, and it may, but you can't really tell people that they can't. I think writing it as a kind of formal rule will probably not accomplish. I'm agreeing with the sentiment. So one thought that I have about this, which is that this conversation be repeated every year, as a, that we sort of, that we put it on our expected agenda, and maybe at the beginning of every fiscal year or whatever, or January, whatever, sometime, there's a conversation concerning this issue, which isn't necessarily just about liaison. It's just about bringing up the kind of things that people have brought up, so that we sort of train ourselves as a culture, and then as new people are added and we're replaced, that'll be a continuing sort of conversation. I think we have a better shot at accomplishing it if it becomes a part of our culture rather than as a legal document.
Well, I didn't think of it as a rule. I thought of it as a definition, you know, kind of part of a definition of, you know, no, you can't legislate it.
One thing that I like the idea of having the liaisons, that people get around and they get to know. And also when we do the board-to-board reportings, that people say, I went here and I heard this. And that. And it's going to be hard when a program comes up for review that for anyone who's a liaison to say, well, I vote against that. You know, my thought, maybe not, but my thought was is so that you don't have board people outside of here collaborating with each other to do exactly what Elaine said. Because I think it's important for us to be able to come to the board table and say, well, yeah, I talked with the director of such and such a program, or here's what he or she told me, and here's how it might relate to the award or not award. But it has to be done without my talking with Elaine for her to support that. And it has to be done in public, because I think doing it in public is okay with me. But as long as I know that she and I didn't out in the parking lot say, "Here's what I'm going to say, and I want you to approve it," that's my reaction to that.
The county has a code of ethics that governs all of us. And it's, I think when we were looking at guidelines for, it maybe even was called Code of Ethics, I got some legal advice that we can't adopt anything that supplants the county's statute, because that's the governing statute. So that is in the orientation packet for new board members. And it does cover some of this. So.
And I think we passed it out again a year ago. Yeah. Just to make sure that people were aware of it and familiar with it. So it's something that, similar to the conversation we're having right now, could also happen every year in whether it's July or January. But I really think that what we're dealing with is creating a culture of trust. We hope. You were the one that first brought this up. Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, excuse me. I just want to say I really like the substitution of this. And kind of to reiterate probably stuff people are saying tonight, and last week we talked about this, is that I think the motivation of the original number five came from a good place, but there's just some things you can't legislate. And I think it's also important for us to recognize that we all have legal rights on this board. We all have certain levels of autonomy. And when it comes to having formal, whether it's a guideline or a policy, I think it's very important that we avoid doing things that discourage or proclaim something to be inappropriate that is within your legal right. Now, I would love to have a board, a rule for the county board that you can't play politics, but you can't really make that a rule. I mean, we would function a lot better if people didn't do that. It'd be better government. In every level, it would be a positive thing that we should do, but just to have, like, rules or recommendations that discourage people from doing things that are within our legal right, I think is inappropriate, and we should try to avoid that. But I do like this idea of having a culture and having discussions, and I think that, you know, for board members to be engaged with our staff who done a great job in mentoring new members to kind of get them familiar with what it's going to be like, I think that that's where those conversations should be had, not necessarily in, you know, something like this. But I do like all the additions.
Just make a final comment. Looking around the room, we're all here. It's a study session. It's not a required board meeting. I think the culture change or shift has occurred over the last couple of years where people are willing to put in additional time to be well informed so that they're able to make decisions that they feel good about or can justify. So I just also wanted to say thank you all for coming for the study session. And we don't have a meeting next week. And so I'm going to suggest that if we've handled this issue, we adjourn. Okay. Great. According to recent advice, we don't need to vote on adjourning.